change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes and see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podskewee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we weren't going to record this week because we were like, our plan was to, let's take a couple weeks off. We'll talk about the free agency that's hitting. We're going to come back next week and do a whole free agency thing. And then the Ticats decided to just go out and sign a bunch of guys that have been on the team that have produced in the past. So we decided, hey, I guess we got to record a podcast this week. So here we are recording a podcast this week, and the first thing we get to talk about is something that I know once you heard it made you pretty happy, made me pretty happy. Speedy B is coming back for two more years, Mike. How great is that?
It's a phenomenal signing. We all know that the Ticats offense just wasn't the same when Banks was injured last year. The production wasn't there. You know, the deep threat wasn't necessarily there. I know we had Braylon Addison came in and did a phenomenal job, really, on come in and try to fill B. But him back in the fold is tremendous. I know we're going to talk about them at length, all the re-signings, but we have quite a few pieces coming back from last year, offensive weapons. So I'm pretty happy about it all.
And look, we can talk about We can talk about what Speedy B's done, all that sorts of stuff. The numbers are there, right? Like, you look at him last year, he played, 14 games, 94 catches, 1,423 yards, 11 touchdowns. Second in the league in receptions, second in the league in receiving yards, tied for tops in touchdown catches. And that's with missing 4.5 games because he got hurt midway through the game against Ottawa. So he misses 4.5 games, and he still is second or first in the league in all three major statistical categories. I've gotten in trouble, you know, funnily in trouble, not actually in trouble, for making grand proclamations about Brandon Banks in the past. You remember when they redid the rules for punt and kick returns? I came on here and said Speedy B's going to score 10 return touchdowns that year. Didn't even come close to happening. I think he had like 4 or 5. Still was named Special Teams Player of the Year, if I'm not mistaken, but he didn't have as many touchdowns as I expected. You look at the numbers he's put up since he's been in the lineup. I believe he's played 24 games as a receiver in this offense, and I think he's just a hair under 2,400 yards. So he's almost at 100 yards a game. We know he can have big games. We know he can go off for those near 200-yard outings. I'm going to put this to you. I'm going to ask you, do you think it's possible, if he stays healthy for a full year, that he could put up 2,000 yards receiving? Because I do. I'm not going to say he will, but I think he could do it.
I think it's a possibility, yes. Do I think it's a likely possibility? Probably not. But you never know. With him back, you know, that he has that great connection with Mazzoli. The June Jones offense really flatters his skills. So, yeah, if he could stay healthy, I'm not going to rule it out. There is a possibility that I could get 2,000 yards, but I don't think it's
I won't say it's likely, because we're asking a guy to do something that's never been done before in the game. Like, no one in the CFL history has recorded a 2,000-yard receiving season, as far as I can recall. I don't think anyone has. No, I'm fairly certain they're did Alan Pitts do it, maybe? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe someone has done it. See, now I'm questioning myself.
That's a tough one, that. Yeah. Well, we all know that Mike Pringle ran for 2,000 yards.
Yeah, Mike Pringle rushed for 2,000.
But the receiving is – slipping my mind.
Yeah, Alan Pitts did do it.
Doug Flutie years?
2036 and 94. And he had 21 touchdowns. God damn. Man, Alan Pitts was – imagine if he played in the modern era, what the numbers he could put up if he was putting up those back way back when. God, he was good.
With all the rules that – well, the rules have always leaned favorably towards the offense in the CFL, but now even more so. He could – I mean, Alan Pitts is one of the best ever. And we know that, but
yeah.
Anyway, it's just been so long that we've actually seen him play that you kind of forget.
Almost 20 years, I think, since he retired. Anyway, we're getting off subject. So I believe Alan Pitts is the only one to do 2,000 yards in a season. So we're asking someone in Brandon Banks to do something that's only been done once in the history of the league. But I think it's possible that it's there. I think it's all about staying healthy, right? And that's kind of been – that was his problem last year. He missed a couple games in the middle of the season due to a nagging injury, and then he came back, and then unfortunately he got hurt. And I don't know. I just think that getting Speedy B, you mentioned it, in this offense back in the fold, it just works. It's the right guy for the right fit. It's just everything about this makes sense from both the team's perspective and the player's perspective. And I kind of wrote about that in my piece for 3Down when the signing first happened, that this is just everyone wins with Brandon Banks coming back to Hamilton. Like, he's in an offense that best suits his skills with an offensive coordinator that trusts him like probably no coach he's ever had trusts him in June Jones. And for Banks, he gets a decent-sized paycheck. We can get into that in a second, what his numbers are. And he gets to come to an offense where he's trusted to be the number one guy. They don't look at him as a diminutive receiver. They just look at him as the star that he is. Like, this is – and we talked about this before. Once this sort of transition to full-time receiver came in, he's taking on that second act of his career. And I know he's 31 years old and speed's a part of his game. And as you get older, it's going to diminish. He's really rounding himself into – a top end receiver. Like, it's not just big plays that he is known for. He's making catches downfield, but he's also making catches in traffic. Like, he's becoming a more complete player, and he's in that second sort of renaissance of his career where now we start talking about if he can pile these 1,000 yards, maybe even a 2,000 yard season up in succession for the next few years. Like, we start talking about Brandon Banks Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Like, this is a guy who has now found that second life in his career in this role. And it's just so much fun to think that he's going to be back. And from what he said, he's fully healthy as of the 20th of January. So he's ready to go. It's the best possible scenario for everyone involved. The fans get a chance to watch him play. The team gets to use the guy that they have to the best of his abilities, and he gets to use those abilities in an offense that's suited for him. Like, there's no downside here as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's just nice to have a star player stay with the same team for the length that he hasn't played. Did he play for someone before he came to Hamilton for a very short period of time?
In the CFL?
Or it's just been, I don't know who I was thinking of from Montreal, but. But yeah, it's nice to see a player stick with the team. You know, he's been with the team for many years now. I think it'd be safe to buy a Speedy Banks jersey and not feel scared that he's going to leave. Or even if he did leave, he's put in such a long tenure that it would be worth, you know, purchasing that jersey. He is on the offensive side of the ball. He is the Ticats. You know, you mentioned Hall of Fame, and I don't think he necessarily would have got into the Hall of Fame just on his return game. You know, even though he was the best in the league for several years returning the ball, it wasn't even a question. But, you know, adding this repertoire to his career in the receiving game, and I think he's always been a good receiver. I think he's always had that skill, but he just never got a chance to really show it. And now that he's developing, it's been fun to watch. And you're right, if he puts together – you know, a couple good seasons receiving, which he already has, but a couple more, yeah, you're looking at a Hall of Fame player.
So let's talk dollars and cents, because it's rare that we get – I mean, it's not entirely rare anymore because our boy Justin Dunk knows it all and finds it all out. But it is rare sometimes we get to talk dollars here. And I'm honestly surprised by – and this is not a knock on Banks – how little the team was able to get him for. It's $182,500 in the first year and $195,000 in the second year. I'm going to say this right now. Duke Williams is now out of the CFL. He signed with the Buffalo Bills. you can make an argument, I think, for Darrell Walker being the best receiver in the CFL. But for my money, with the way Brandon Banks played in this offense, he's the best receiver in the Canadian Football League. And he's not the highest paid player at his position. Greg Ellingson was over 200. Walker, I believe, was over 200. There's a couple other guys on the list that are above him. So, like, Banks gets a pay raise. And he, like, look, 182 and 195 grand is nothing to sneeze at. I think we'd all would take that. That's a good chunk of change. That's upper echelon money. But for him to not be the highest paid player, that's a good deal for the Ticats. I think, obviously, he's happy with the deal he signed. The team's happy. They get him at what I think is a team-friendly number. You got to pay your upper echelon players top dollar, and they are paying him top dollar, but they're not paying tippy top dollar. So just an all-around great deal when you think of the financials, because now this will allow the team to go out and sign more players.
Yeah, I think he shows a commitment to the team by Banks. I don't think he'd want to play anywhere else in the CFL. He's a Ticat guy. But, like, I think he should be the highest paid player in the league. I mean, receiver in the league. If you just look at production over the last year and a half, he blows everyone out of the water. So maybe in the traditional sense, he's not the best receiver in the league. But on the stat sheet, he sure is. So I'm happy to have him back at a decent price. Because, like you said, we can go and get other talent that way. But, you know, I think that he deserves to be the highest paid receiver in the league.
I think so, too. One last thing before we talk about some of the other talent that the team has brought back. I kind of have been batting this around in my brain a little bit. Wrote a bit about it for Three Down earlier today, actually. With bringing him back, so now you have Banks under contract. They re-signed Jalen Saunders earlier in the offseason. We know Luke Tasker's back. Braylon Addison stepped up and had some monster games down the stretch when Banks got hurt. That looks like you're starting four American receivers. We're going to probably find a Canadian guy. Hopefully it's Mike Jones, which I can't believe I'm actually saying, but hopefully that's the guy that they bring him back. There's your starting five. Kind of takes the Ticats out of the running for signing any of their other receivers, so guys like Terrence Tolliver, guys like Chris Williams, probably not coming back. Maybe Chris Williams, maybe just because I think June Jones would like to have him in that offense with his skill set. But I think it also takes him kind of out of the running for any other major free agent receivers out there. I know there's a lot of sentiment to bring Greg Ellingson back to Hamilton. I know a lot of people want Daron Carter. Brian Burnham's a free agent. Manny Arsenault's a free agent. I just don't – I look at what the Ticats have, and I don't think that they're going to go out and spend any money to bring in a free agent receiver. Do you think I'm out to lunch on this, or are you siding with me on this one?
No, I think I'm going to side with you. Those four, plus the possibility of Mike Jones being that Canadian wide receiver, which I totally agree with you. I think that we should really try to bring him back. He just has shown a lot last year, you know, midway through the season, late in the season. I think he's a game breaker waiting to happen. He is going to be one of the best Canadian receivers in the league for years to come. It took a while for him to develop, but now that I think that he's got his confidence underneath him, he's not dropping passes anymore. He's not making foolish penalties or anything like that. He's a top end Canadian receiver right now. So to bring him back would be a huge addition. But you mentioned the four starters, you know, those guys are, that's a scary bunch. There's not a lot of height in those receivers, but that's not really what June Jones looks for. He's all about speed. We know this. And all four of those guys, you know, Tasker's not the fastest guy in the world, but he can still move. And he's, you know how I feel about Tasker. But all other three of those guys have speed that kills. So, you know, Jalen Saunders is going to be an all-star next year. If he stays healthy, I pretty much guarantee it. He's Brandon Banks 2.0. Braylon Addison showed what he could do when he came in. So you look at those receivers, and they're a pretty dangerous bunch. I'm pretty excited about that group.
Yeah, and I just don't think there's any room for another guy. You know, I think
no one's going to start over them, really.
No, who are you going to bring in? You're paying Banks top end money. You're paying Tasker top end money. You signed Saunders to an extension, even though he's going to miss some time. He obviously got a pay raise. You got Addison, who's proven he can play, and he's, I believe, on like a rookie contract essentially. That you're getting that type of production out of a guy who's making $100,000 or less. You can't really quibble about that. You're not going to replace him with a guy that you're going to pay twice as much. I just don't see any room on this team for any other free agent receivers. So, I mean, you know, who knows what happens come free agency time? Anything is possible, but I just look at the what we see so far, what we've seen, and I can't see this team going into any bidding wars for any of those players. As good as all those players are, and they will find homes, and they will be productive, and I think all of them, or any of the free agent receivers out there, any top-end ones, would be productive if they came to Hamilton. I just don't think there's a place for them.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I'm not gonna cry if they sign a Greg Ellingson or a Brian Burnham, because those guys are tremendous talents, and Ellingson has been burning the Ticats ever since he left them, so it'd be nice to have him back. But if they don't do anything, I am satisfied with this core group right now.
Okay, another thing you got to be satisfied with is something you can lord over me, man. Alex Green is coming back on a one-year extension. We can relive the whole John White, Alex Green debate that we had fun with throughout the year last year, but there was no doubt that this guy was a top of the priorities to bring back. June Jones loves him, wants him in the offense. The numbers, when you look at what he's put up in limited action, he played in 8 regular season games last year. He had over 800 total yards and 8 touchdowns. Again, it kind of like with Banks, if this guy can put together a full season, if he can stay healthy and play 15, 16, 17 games, the sky's the limit. We could be talking about a rushing champion because, the Ticats actually run the ball now. But bringing him back on a one-year deal, I think it's a great signing by the Ticats.
Yeah, I like it a lot. You know, I'm a big fan of Green. The guy just produces. I mean, whenever you're in the red zone, it seems you hand off the ball to Green, and he's gonna find a way to get get 6 points. So, and, you know, average carry of 5.3 yards. That's pretty good. It's he's an exciting player to watch. I think that he, for his size, you know, you wouldn't think he'd be a great blocker, but I think that he does a great job in that field. I think he catches the ball out of the backfield really well. He's a great runner, and he's a threat in the red zone. So, for my money, I wouldn't want any other running back in the backfield for the Ticats.
Yeah, and speaking of money, I don't have exact dollar figures here, but I asked around, and the consensus seems to be that he's probably making around or maybe even under $100,000 on this extension. I was told James Wilder Jr. makes $110,000, and he is probably the highest paid American running back. Andrew Harris, I believe, is the highest paid running back, period. And the thinking is, you're not going to give Green more than Wilder makes, even though, and maybe we're biased here, I think Green's a better player. The problem is with Green, though, didn't stay healthy. He only played in 8 games last year out of 18, so he's got to stay on the field. So you're getting him a really good price on the cap, too. He's productive. He's going to want to prove that he can stay healthy. This could be a big year for Alex Green in this offense, I think.
You can only hope. I mean, the guy has shown that he's a player ever since he's been here, so yeah, I think getting these pieces back that are familiar with this offense, familiar with the Tiger Cat organization, is going to help this team a lot next year.
All right, another guy that they brought back, another guy that we've both been big fans of in the past, Mike Daly comes back as well. This to me wasn't a surprise. He's a local guy. This team has spent years developing him. He finally gets his chance to start. I believe he started 17 of 18 games last year. The only game he didn't start in the regular season was the season finale, when they were holding out a bunch of starters and playing a meaningless game against the Montreal Alouettes. Had made some big plays last year, proved that he could start, beat out Courtney Steven, who was an all-star caliber safety for the Ticats, beat him out in training camp for the job. Ticats bring Daly back. This wasn't a surprise to me. What about you? Same sort of thing, saw it and said, yeah, it makes sense.
Like, overall, he had a good season last year. I thought there were some ups and downs.
Yep, for sure.
In there. But maybe a slight surprise, because I always thought that, you know, Daly was a Glanville guy. You know, Glanville came in and started Daly over Courtney Steven, and I thought it was an interesting move. But, yeah, I like Daly, and I'm glad to see him back. It just makes me wonder what's the future for Courtney Steven. I mean, he's good enough to be starting. We all know this. And I don't although I believe that he enjoys being on the Tiger Cats, I don't think he's going to want to be a backup going forward.
Couldn't agree with you more, Mike. I think this probably spells the end of Steven's tenure with the Ticats. I know he's got interests outside of football and has spent the last few years kind of building up his post-football life. So I'm not saying he's ready to call quits by any stretch of the imagination, but he's got other things he can do. But you're right. He is a starting caliber player that just needs a team to give him a chance to start. The only way I could see him sticking around in Hamilton is maybe you sign him and you put him back out there at that wide side corner position that he played to start his career before they moved into safety after Craig Butler got hurt and unfortunately had to retire. That's always a possibility, which would give the Ticats some great ratio flexibility, allow them maybe to play five American receivers or add an American to the offensive line. You never know, right? Like, anything's possible. And I just think that if the idea is that Steven is going to be a starting safety, I think re-signing Daly kind of takes that out of the realm of possibility. You know what I mean? And you're right. I too thought that maybe Daly was a Glanville guy and that with a change at coordinator, anything was possible, but we don't know what Mark Washington would like to do. Maybe he says there and goes, you know what, get me Steven back. We'll throw him out on the wide side corner position and let him play out there. Anything is still possible. We're still a little, 8 days away from the opening of free agency. But I think if we're talking about the safety position with Daly back, I don't think Courtney Steven has a chance to start. And I think if that's where he's going to play and be most effective, he's probably going to be doing it elsewhere.
Yeah, you'd have to think so.
It's a shame,
too. Hopefully not. It's on the Argos or something like that, because that would kind of...
That's the team I could kind of see him going. I believe Jermaine Gabriel, their starting safety, is a free agent. Stevens, you know, he's from the Brampton area, if I'm not mistaken, so he's a local guy. I don't know. I could see him in double blue, Mike.
Yeah, I could see that too. It's just a, you know, it's a good option. If you say if you leave the Argos or the Ticats, it's not very far away. You're still in Ontario. You're still close to home. So, yeah, I could see it too.
Yeah, it happens a lot. Ticats signing with Toronto, Argos signing with Hamilton. It's a very frequent occurrence. I think it's probably because then guys don't have to really move.
Mm-hmm. Precisely.
All right, another local guy that's sticking around, Justin Vaughn, signed a one-year extension with the team, spent most of last year injured, unfortunately, but in his rookie season the year before that, played some significant time when Ted Laurent was hurt and didn't look out of place as a rookie. He's a Hamilton-born guy. Again, one of those guys that you just think, okay, he's with the Ticats, he's playing for his hometown team, probably wants to stick around. I believe his parents still live here, so didn't really see a whole lot of a chance of him leaving. But he's a valuable depth player with starting experience. Like, I think this is one of those signings that people in the media business like to call sneaky good. It's not one that pops out at you, but it's one that pays dividends throughout the year because not only can he start, but he can get in there in a rotation with Teddy Laurent, and hopefully he's fully healed from the injury he suffered last year. But that's what I think. I think this is a sneaky good signing by the Ticats.
Yeah, another guy that was drafted in the late rounds by the Tiger Cats in the fifth round, 38th overall. So finding guys late in the draft again that can play ball, you know, it's tough to do in the CFL draft, and the Tiger Cats seem to just keep doing it year after year after year. And you know, he's not a necessarily proven player yet, but I think that he can get there, and maybe this is a season that he really, breaks out and shows what he has. So, it's nice to have a guy back that's from the area. And, you know, he's a big dude, 6'5", 285. I mean, he's a presence in that middle. So we're going to see him develop, and I think he's going to turn into quite a good player.
I think that's one of the things that we need to talk about when it comes to the Ticats has been their ability to find quality players late in the draft. We talked about it with Sean Thomas Arlington, who was an eighth-round pick a couple of years ago, and he's turned into a guy that's contributed on offense and on special teams. Mike Daly was a sixth-round pick in 2013 and is now a starting player. Justin Vaughn, you mentioned, a fifth-round pick. Like, these are historically, if you go back and look at drafts, it's like outside of the first two or three rounds, you see a lot of names of guys that you're like, I don't even think they played in the league. But you look at the Ticats, and this goes to Drew Alemang and their scouting system, especially their Canadian scouting system, they have done a heck of a job finding these diamonds in the rough late in the draft, kind of supplemented some misses they've had at the top of the draft. Lyndon Gadosh comes to mind, first overall pick that never really lived up to the hype. But you see these guys that come in from, you know, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, seventh, and in Arlington's case, the eighth round, and become contributors. That's not normal. Go if you look at teams, even the teams like Winnipeg. Winnipeg drafts, especially under Kyle Walters, have been really, really solid. They don't have a ton of guys that you'll see that'll have sixth and seventh round grades on them. Ticats have a bunch that are starting or, at worst, making significant contributions, not on special teams, but on offense and defense. That speaks to the talent of our scouts. And in the Canadian Football League, what's the one thing we always hear? Quarterback play and Canadian content is what wins you games. Ticats have that in spades.
I thought it was quarterback play in German and Mexican content.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second, my friend. Oh, we'll get to that in a second.
But another signing along the defensive line was Nikita Whitlock.
Yeah, this one kind of did take me by surprise.
Okay, go on.
Well, I just thought he was, to me, like that middle class of players, which I think Whitlock comes. He's not a superstar, but at the same time, he's not like so terrible that you have to get rid of him. He's kind of in that middle area where it's like he can contribute, but is he worth bringing back? Or do you go out and try to find one of those league men guys, those American free agent guys that you find at those tryout camps and have him have a spot? I think the reason they bring him back is his versatility. He can play offense, even though it wasn't anything to write home about. Obviously, he's very good on defense, and he plays special teams. I think that might be why they brought him back on a 2-year extension. But yeah, this one was like, oh, okay. Like when I was doing my list of who the Ticats should kind of prioritize, I did it before all of these signings and had to go back and edit it as I think it will be posted on 3Down. I think it's tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, it could be up today. So anyway, he was one of those guys I had in this, like, will he or won't he? Like there's a good reason for him, the Ticats, bring him back, and there's reasons to not. So it's like, I don't know what they're going to do with this guy. And they bring him back. It's not 2 years, which was surprising. Justin Vaughn only got 1 year. Mike Daly only got 1 year. Alec Green only got 1 year. 2 years is a significant extension in the CFL, as crazy as that sounds. They must really like what Whitlock brings to the table. And it also makes me wonder if a guy like, say, Jason Neal, who also played defensive tackle, if they're maybe thinking of moving on from him and pairing up Whitlock with Ted Laurent and Justin Vaughn to be that sort of fierce middle of the team. Like, could Whitlock become the starting guy opposite Teddy Laurent? That's what I'm kind of looking at here. And I don't know. I like the signing. Don't get me wrong. But I really like him as a player just because he's that compact, kind of just ferocious, does-it-all type guy, which is one of those players that I really, really like. So I'm glad he's back. It took me by a little bit by surprise when I saw his name on the list of guys that had re-signed.
Yeah, I've always liked two-way Whitlock. He appeared in 28 games with the Ticats over two seasons, 33 defensive tackles, 18 special teams tackles, 6 quarterback sacks, and 1 forced fumble. Yeah, I like him too. I was a little bit surprised as well that they brought him back. But I think he'll be a force in the middle on the defensive line, and I think that, you know, you can put him in a fullback if they have a they ever play with a fullback, or, you know, of a short yardage situation, they can put them at running back, and maybe in the red zone they use them a little bit more this year to plow into the end zone, because I don't know what it is about the CFL, but I don't see any other league where the ball players get tackled at the 1 yard line and they have to, you know, plow it in. So maybe they use him that way too. But yeah, he's a versatile player, and glad to see him back.
Yeah. When I used to buy jerseys, I would always go for guys that maybe weren't headliners. Like, you always saw, like, everyone had the starting quarterback's jersey, or everyone had the starting running back's jersey. If I was still buying jerseys, Whitlock would be the kind of guy that I'd be like, you know what, I want a Nikita Whitlock jersey, because he's one of those guys that just, he's a grinder, and he's the jersey that no one else is going to have. I don't buy jerseys anymore because I have a box in the basement that is just filled with ex-Ticat players whose jerseys I had for a year and a half, and then they got cut or traded, because that's just the way things go in the CFL. But yeah, he's just one of those guys that I just like. He's a football player, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's almost like a position.
He's a Steel Town football player.
He's
yeah.
You called him two-way, right, Mike? And that I think that's pretty apt. But he's like a defining him by position doesn't do him justice to what he can do on the football field. And I there's just something about those types of guys, those grinders, those do whatever it takes type guys that I gravitate towards.
Yeah, he's just a guy you want to choose. He's a guy that belongs on the Ticats, a hard-nosed football player.
Yeah, I agree. So those are all the signings, but now we got to talk about something that I'm a little uncomfortable talking about because it involves a guy I know. It involves Justin Dunk, but it's Ticats news. It was written about on 3Down, so it's I feel like it's something we have to touch on, Mike. Simone Lawrence, pending free agent, you know, former all-star linebacker for the Ticats. His contract's up now. In a week's time, he's free to sign elsewhere. Been a very vocal player during his career, and he's been a very popular player in Tiger Town. Well, our boy Justin Dunk went on the radio, and I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially said that what he's getting, the things he's hearing, and the thing I need to preface this all with is Justin Dunk does not deal in making stuff up. And we're going to talk about some of the things that Simone Lawrence has to say. Justin Dunk's track record is virtually spotless. If he says something, it's because he's done his work. And what he said on TSN 1150 here in Hamilton was that what Simone Lawrence is going to be probably asking for versus what the Ticats are willing to give him, they might not match up. And boy, did Lawrence take exception to this. Like, just constant tweets talking, you know, about Dunk negatively. And yeah, he's a friend of mine, so I am going to defend him. And I just read these things and I don't know. I love Simone Lawrence, the player. I've enjoyed watching him play for the Ticats. He does not come off looking good here, as far as I'm concerned. He kind of looks like a baby.
Yeah, and let's be honest here. He's always been I'm trying to be careful. I think he's been, off the field or, like, on the field, trash talk, all that. If you played for the Argos or anyone else, we were talking about this before the show, but, you know, we'd hate him. He's a bit of a goof. That's my opinion. I always kind of thought that. I'm not a fan that will back up, you know, whatever a Ticat player says, whatever player does, it's always right. I'm not that kind of fan, okay? If I think a guy's an idiot, I'm going to say he's an idiot. And that's the case with Simone Lawrence. He's a great player, don't get me wrong, and I want him to be on the Ticats, but his mouth is kind of turns me off. It's like, you know, he just acts incredibly immature sometimes, as he showed on Twitter about Dunk, you know, recently. So he came off really bad, I think. I don't think Dunk said anything that was offensive. He was just stating that this might, you know, he didn't say that if he goes somewhere else, he won't get a huge paycheck, but maybe the Ticats just don't see it's worth it to give him all that money. And, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Dunk was just doing his job. He's on the radio. He has to talk about players and contracts and all this stuff. So Simone came off really immature in this one. I don't support anything he said about Dunk at all.
Yeah, and, like, look, we're buddies with Justin Dunk. Like, I work with him at 3Down. You've met him a couple of times out at some parties. Like, he's a good dude, and he does his job really, really well. But just some of the stuff that Lawrence was saying, I got the tweets here, and it's none of you guys even know what I make because I don't leak shit. I don't gossip. CFLPA don't even know what I make, and that's a fact. What? Like, what does that even mean? Media guys can't do their job, so they make shit up when they can't get info from players. What is he talking about? Like, he talks about how Dunk DMs him and asks him for information. He doesn't give it to him. And that's fine, but guess what? Reporters going to players and asking them questions is not a guy not doing his job. That is a guy doing his job. If you don't want to provide him with answers, that's perfectly fine. I've got no issue with that. But to sit here and act like Justin Dunk is bad at his job or Justin Dunk is saying something about you because you don't feed him information is it's bullshit. It's just it's ludicrous. It's I hate even talking about it because it seems so gossipy and high schooly, but
right.
I just think Simone Lawrence came off looking really, really poor here. Like, I don't know, man. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, there's nothing much else to say about it, really. I mean, I'm just sick of all the negative stuff that gets thrown his way. I mean, Dunk is always, he's right 99.9, if not 100% of the time. And for all these people to be like, oh, they make stuff up and all, I just don't get where that comes from.
It comes from people not wanting the things that they read to be true. Ryder fans got all over him when he was covering all the stuff that Chris Jones was doing. And all of the stuff that Chris Jones was doing that Dunk was covering that people were saying, no, you don't know what you're talking about. You're full of it. It all turned out to be true. Oh, he worked out Johnny Manziel. No, that didn't happen. They got fined. Chris Jones got fined for talking to Johnny Manziel's publicist. Chris Jones was talking to a publicist? Give me a break. Come on. You know, everything that Dunk writes is meticulously sourced. We don't run a story on 3Down about news-related items, which is what Dunk excels at. That's what his job is. He's the scoops guy. I'm a guy who works for the site. I provide analysis. I'm not going to break a story. I'm not going to be a guy that goes out there and talks about things that I don't know about. I rely on guys like Dunk to do their job, and then I can use what he tells me to provide context for that. That is what I am hired by 3Down to do. Dunk goes out and gets news stories. He goes out and gets scoops. He digs. He talks to people. He's got connections around the league. He's probably the best. Now, maybe again, that's maybe biased on my opinion, but he's probably the best guy out there getting these stories out to the people, and we are fortunate to be able to work with him at 3Down Nation. He's awesome at what he does, and I think that's what rattles people's feathers. You see things like Lawrence going off on him, and it makes me go, okay, what's the truth to this? You know what I mean? Because it's always when, and you probably remember it as a kid, when your parents caught you doing something, you started getting really angry, you started throwing a temper tantrum and whatnot. It's because you got caught doing something you weren't supposed to do, or it's because what they were talking to you about, it was true. There was some truth to it. It's like they found out something, and you didn't want them, so you get all boisterous and animated, and you think it's going to go away, and it doesn't. And that's what this feels like. And people just don't want to accept. Look, sports fans are like that. They view their team as part of themselves. They view their team as part of their identity. Like, if the Riders win, Riders fans feel good, and they feel a part of the team, and when someone attacks what the team is doing, people defend it. People defended Simone against of the things he was saying about Dunk, and some of them are people that I hold in some esteem, and I disagree with them, and I'm sure a majority of them are going to listen to this show, and they're going to hear this, but I just look at a guy like Dunk. He goes about, he does his job. Like, Chris Jones threatened to sue 3Down Nation when we posted some of the stuff about him. And those lawsuits never came to be because what Dunk wrote was true. So it's like, at the end of the day, guys can flip out, fans can flip out, but does it change the fact that if Dunk says it, chances are, I mean, almost 100% chance, it's right.
Yep. And it just, I just think that Simone lost his mind over something that wasn't worth
losing your mind, right?
Over.
Like, it was such an innocuous statement, and it's not like Dunk saying no one should give Simone Lawrence any money. He's a bum. He can't play anymore. It was, he probably thinks he's worth a certain amount of money. The Ticats are probably thinking he's not worth that amount of money, but someone else will. Like, it just seems like to lose your mind and go on like a 10-tweet rant about a guy because of this just seems
overblown.
It seems silly to me.
Yeah, very silly. I don't think I have anything more to talk about.
No, I think we spent too much time talking about this.
Yes.
Let's kick off. Let's talk about some CFL news here. A couple of things. First off, we talked about the CFL in Mexico. Now we got to talk about the CFL in Germany. They signed a partnership, the CFL did, with a German football league. It looks like German players are going to be coming to the combine in March. I wrote about this. So when we talked about the Mexican thing, I said, people are talking about what should Mexican players be? Should they be – like, how should they be classified? And I said, they're internationals. I said the same thing. I wrote a piece for 3Down about this after the German deal came out. These players are internationals. Why are we talking about making a separate category for these people? and some CFL players, because, you know, because three down people read Three Down Nation. It's a pretty big platform. CFL players were getting in on the action. Rob Maver in particular didn't seem to be too happy about these partnerships, talking about how this is another partnership that had zero consultation with the Players Association. There's a CBA coming up. Again, it just feels like, why are we doing this now? You know what I mean? Like, and I know we've discussed this, so we're not going to go too heavy into it, because we discussed it when the Mexican thing happened. I'm all for expanding the CFL's reach, partnering with these football leagues. It's a good idea. Are we going to get to the point where we're going to be having these players be forced onto rosters? Because that's the thing that worries me most about all of this. Is it going to get to the point where teams are going to be told you have to carry a player, not from Canada or not from the United States? Because now we're just completely gutting the play on the field. And again, maybe it's because we don't have enough information about this, Mike. But I'm concerned. I think that's the best way to say it. I'm concerned that we're going to see a downtick in the quality of play on the field, because I feel like with this new CBA, one of the negotiating things is going to be getting a designation, I know that's redundant, for these non-Canadian, non-American players. And I just don't like that idea.
Yeah, I'm with you. They should just be internationals. If they're good enough to play, they should play. If they're not, they shouldn't. But I guess you'd say that about Canadian players too.
I suppose you can, but I will say this. If the German Football League has a ratio rule that says X number of players have to be German, and that stops some Canadian players from playing over there, so be it. If a homegrown league wants homegrown players to play, I don't have a problem with that. If the NFL came out tomorrow and said 75% of the roster has to be American players, I would not pitch a fit about it, because if you think that that is going to help your product, you think that is going to help people want to watch it, because I think that's the reason the Canadian Football League has a ratio, is they think that people want to see Canadian players. And to a certain extent, I agree with that. I think there's something about, we talked about Mike Daly, we talked about Justin Vaughn. Those are guys who have been given a chance to develop, who have played, who are local guys. They're guys that live in this community or from this community. Daly went to McMaster. Vaughn went to Sir Allan McNabb High School. Like, that's where I played football when I was 9 years old. So it's like people can get that connection with players. So if leagues around the world want to have exemptions for players from those countries, I don't have a problem with that. So that's why I don't have a problem with the CFL.
Yeah. I totally agree. You know, it's the Canadian Football League, right? You should have some Canadian players in there. I just think they should be straight up internationals. They shouldn't be forcing this issue. You know, they shouldn't be forcing teams to put German players on the squad or Mexican players. I'm all for this expanding and trying to get more money and all that stuff, but I just don't see it being a good idea to bring in German, Mexican, whatever country you're from, and having their own special designation. I think they should just be international. So I'm totally with you on this one, Josh.
If they can play, put them on the field. Like that's the thing.
Exactly.
If you bring up a Mexican player, if you bring in a German player, if you bring in a Polish player, if you bring in a Jap, like, I don't care where you're from. If you can play and they're better, then they get to play. Like, I think these partnerships are good for expanding the CFL's reach. I think it's good to develop these relationships, because maybe they will find a player or two that can really perform on a Canadian field and get some eyeballs from around the world on the CFL. I am all for all of that. What I'm not for is making exceptions, making exemptions, and making teams carry these guys if they're not good enough. And a lot of the reason for that is, how many years have we heard people say, man, what if we just had one spot for a Canadian quarterback to play? And I think we talked about this when we talked about the Mexican draft and the combine. What if every team had to carry a Canadian quarterback? And the reason against that has always been there's not enough good Canadian quarterbacks talented enough to be on a CFL roster. If that's the case, are we really going to find a Mexican and a German and whatever? Because I think this is the start, not the end, of these international partnerships with football leagues across the world. At what point are they going to say, well, you have to carry three of these guys, or like whatever the number ends up being? Are they really going to find enough talent to play? Because if these players could play, they already would have been found. like there's a plenty of German players. Well, maybe not plenty, but there's a few German players that play in the NFL. If these guys were talented enough, someone would have found them already. To allow an exemption to get them on a roster to placate a $1 million TV deal in Mexico or Germany or France or wherever, to me, you're putting the business ahead of the product on the field. And as much as I want to see the CFL grow financially and that'll make the game bigger and allow these players to make more money, and that's all a good thing, if the product on the field suffers for it, I'm not going to give a crap.
Yeah, exactly. That's the most important thing, right? We want to see great football on the field, and we want the product to grow, obviously, financially, but that's the main thing, right? If you put a great product on the field, then you have a better chance of growing the game financially. So if there's not room, I mean, are they going to, you know, how many roster spots are we going to be giving? Or is there going to be a Mexican spot, German spot, you know, a Sweden spot, or whatever? It's I don't really get that part of it at all. I see the TV deal that may or may not be in those countries, but to force players that aren't good enough onto the field is a bad move.
And the one thing about this German agreement that I do not like is having them compete in the Canadian Combine. Mm-hmm. You did a separate Mexican Combine, and fine. You, whether you agree or disagree with that, it happened, and it's going to continue that, whatever. Now, are we adding spot? Like, let's say there's, you know, we'll do a nice round number 10. They invite 10 Germans to the Canadian Combine in March in Toronto. Is that 10 additional spots? Or is that 10 spots they're taking from Canadian players? Because if that's the case, I've got a big problem with this. If it's not the case, okay, I guess I don't really care. But this all boils down to, again, we have no idea what is going on. We hear about these things, and the only information we get is the information that guys like Justin Dunk at Three Down go out and find, because the CFL has been silent on this stuff. They say this is what we're going to do, but they don't give you any details, and it's frustrating. As a fan, it's frustrating not knowing. As a commentator, as a podcaster, as an analyst, it is super frustrating to not know what the hell is going on and how these things are going to work. Like, this Randy Ambrosi talked about transparency, and none of this is transparent. We don't know the Mexican Combine and draft. We found that out because Dunk broke the story saying there's going to be a Mexican Combine and draft before the league even said anything. Like, it's just like, tell me what's going on so we don't have to sit here and maybe be angry about nothing. You know what I mean? We look like fools.
Yeah. Just let us know the information, what's going on, what the plan is, you know? There has to be a plan, you'd think, but we're kind of in the dark when it comes to how many players are going to be brought in, all that stuff. So we'll see what happens, but I don't know. I don't know how many countries he plans on, you know, expanding to. Do you think there's more talent in Germany than there is Mexico? Like, I have no idea.
You know what? I do. Because I think the German Football League's been around for quite some time.
Yeah.
So I do think there's probably more talent there. And I know part of this is also allowing for Canadian players after their university careers who maybe aren't good enough for the CFL to continue their careers. And that's a good thing, too. And maybe those guys go over there and develop a little bit and come back here. Like, there are definitely positives to this that I could admit to. It's just there's certain things about this, and I think it all boils down to just not knowing what the hell is going on. Like, not knowing the fine details of this, that really kind of just puts me over the edge here. And maybe it's all for naught, and we'll look like idiots in 3 weeks when they announce this, or in a month or so when we find out everything that's going on. And I'm just like, oh, okay, like, cool. You know what I mean? But, like, until then, all we can go off of is what we've heard. And most of the stuff I hear about this, I don't really like.
Yeah, they should, you know, toss us a bone here. Throw some information. We're kind of in the dark about what's going on. So the concept, I think, is a good idea. Whenever you can try to bring in more money from, you know, places that you weren't getting money from before, I think is a good idea. It's a good business decision. But you're absolutely right. We just don't know enough details about the plan, about the project, what's happening. So hopefully we'll find out sooner than later.
The concept is great. The execution has been botched.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, something that wasn't botched was the Montreal Alouettes unveiling their new uniforms. This is like the first new uniform design this team's had pretty much since they came back in the league. I know they changed things a little bit here and there, but essentially this team has looked the same since 1996. They unveiled this new uniform, much fanfare. Mike, I'll let you lead off on this one. What did you think?
Nothing. They're okay. Look, listen, I think it's an improvement over the ones that they've had for the past 20 years or so. I've never been a huge fan of those uniforms, but you know, getting new uniforms is a good thing. You know, it makes people somewhat excited, but I'm worried about the actual team. You know, the play on the field next year, opposed to what they're wearing. Now, obviously, I'm not an Alouettes fan, and if they suck, then they suck, and that won't really bother me. But I think that they're, you know, making some interesting decisions in the coaching category, and you know, Kavis Reed's still there as a GM, and he hasn't been successful at all, really. Whenever, like, wherever he's been, so the uniforms are good, but I'm not sure the team will be.
I was like, meh on the uniforms. Like, man, you just really used that to just take a giant dump on the Alouettes, and I kind of loved it. The uniforms are okay. Like, did you see that logo and not go, that's the Ultimate Warrior?
Oh, I didn't even connect that. But
like,
now
it looks like the Ultimate Warrior's face paint.
Yeah, one warrior nation.
Like, I think what they've done is interesting. I'm not too hot about the colors. I feel like it's really sort of, I don't know, like
Texans, Houston Texans.
Yeah, it's kind of like yes, that's kind of like the Houston Texans uniform. But I did think that the way that they're doing the logo on the helmet, with it kind of engulfing the entire top of it, and like you look at it from the sides and it looks like wings, then you look at it kind of from the front and it looks like an M. Like, I think that was pretty cool looking. I'm not like the logo is what the logo is, and I will continue to make Ultimate Warrior jokes about it probably until they ever decide to change it, or at least, you know, for the first part of this year, especially if they're bad. We can make a ton of like terrible Warrior wrestling match jokes, because like if you go back, I know we all love the Ultimate Warrior as a kid, but man, if you go back as an adult and watch this stuff, he was garbage. So if they end up being garbage, they are basically the Ultimate Warrior. Dude, trust me, it's not pretty. Ultimate
that
Warrior
Hulk
match,
Hogan promo, WrestleMania 6, is not garbage. Okay.
you understood what he was saying there? Because that sounded
absolutely.
Like those were words, but I don't know if those sentences were actually like coherent. But either way, I'm just saying, it'll give us a chance to make those jokes throughout the year. But I don't know, these uniforms, and again, it seems like Alouettes fans really like them, and I guess at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. I'm not buying Alouettes merchandise, so why the hell do I care?
Exactly, and you know, that's one thing that you don't really see. Like, I haven't been to an Alouettes game in many, many years, but from what I hear from social media and when I look on TV, there doesn't seem to be a ton of Alouette gear in the crowd. So if this can help them out and, you know, fill that stadium with some Montreal Alouettes apparel, I mean, that's a good thing for the team. But yeah, to me, it's kind of meh.
Yeah, let's just hope they don't run out of Zeds, and so they can make all those Manziel jerseys that those guys will buy.
Oh, right, yes.
We forgot about him, didn't we?
I almost did until he got the flu or something this last weekend when they were going to show off the uniforms. He wasn't there, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe he does have the flu, and maybe I'm just being looking into nothing, but I don't know.
I don't know.
He seems to have the flu quite a bit.
He does. He gets the flu quite a bit, so maybe he needs to do something about his lifestyle or his diet or something so he doesn't get sick so often.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess the uniforms are fine. And I mean, it's hard to tell when they do those fashion show type things. Let's see them on the field. Because I remember when I saw the Ticats uniforms when they did the rebrand, when they moved from what was it? Oh, no, it wasn't when they moved from they didn't change suppliers. They just changed the jerseys all that one year. Remember seeing them at first and going, man, I don't really like those. But then you see them on the field and you kind of get used to them a little bit. And it's like, oh, they're pretty neat.
And then they change them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they change them. Right, like, But I don't know. I like the Ticat uniforms, and other people will be like they're kind of plain. But I don't know. Maybe you just get used to seeing them on the field, and then you're once they become – it's like the Red Blacks, right? Like when the Red Blacks announced their name, it was like, are you kidding me, the Red Blacks? And now it's been 5-6 years, and that's just their name. You accept it. It's still silly, but whatever. You don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, I'm completely over that. Yeah, we don't have to get into that. But no. Some people still harp on the name, and I'm like, man, it's not changing. Just you know, live with it.
Yeah, there's much worse things about that franchise than their name. Oh, there we go. Hey, my one dig at the Red Blacks per episode is alive. Keeping it alive.
Now we just have to get a dig on the Argos. No. We had the Montreal. No, we had Ottawa.
Yeah, Argos suck. That's just. Yeah. We could say that at the end of every episode, and it'll still be true. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
I mean, they did hire Josh Chapdelaine as their offensive coordinator. So, I mean, if James Wilder Jr. thinks he's going for 1K, he's sorely mistaken.
Yeah, Wilder's back, eh? I thought he'd be in the NFL by now, you know, having 2,000-yard season. It's only 15, 14 yards a quarter, so, you know.
Jeez. I love your mini one-sided feud with James Wilder Jr. is one of my favorite things in the world.
I tweeted at the Argos the other day. They had a package of his highlights from last year. I just said, meh. Oh.
What did you say? Oh,
it was pretty meh. It was pretty meh.
Oh, my God. You know, I'm the one who used to be the guy who trolled people, and now I'm trying to be a little bit more professional, so I guess you have to take the mantle. But that is A-plus troll behavior. James Wilder Jr.
Surprised he didn't respond, but, you know, oh well.
Well, just keep...
We'll see what he predicts this year, or next season, you know, if he's going to have 1,500 and 1,500. So, we'll see.
Oh my God, 2,000 and 2,000?
Yeah.
I mean, if 1,000 only... What was it, 14 yards a quarter? 2,000 is only 28.
Yeah, do the math. You know, and then he'll bring up his sister, and she'll dominate this league too.
Yeah, oh my God, I forgot about that. Okay, this is getting this is getting to the silly season. I think the episode is ready to wrap. So that was Podskewee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.